Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you for joining us again this week. We are currently recording in the month of May, which houses many different wellness and awareness topics, one of which is food allergies. So in today's episode, I'll be providing you with some insight regarding both food allergies and food intolerances. My guest and I had to reschedule, so I'm going to be flying solo today, and then when she returns at a later date, we'll dive a little bit deeper into this topic. Just a quick note, if you are listening to this in May of 2024, we are going to be holding our monthly wellness webinar next week where we will be elaborating on today's topic. So if you've never registered for one of our monthly webinars, what are you waiting for? They are totally free and all registrants will receive a link to the recording so you can sign up even if you cannot attend the live event. And if you've completely missed the registration deadline, all of these webinars eventually get uploaded to the Dish with Dina YouTube channel, and you can access the links to everything that I'm talking about right now in the notes of this episode. So one of the other things I really encourage you to do is please sign up for our newsletter so that you don't miss a thing. So for today's discussion, I hope that you learn about the differences between allergies and intolerances, some of the most common symptoms and potential risks, and how to make informed decisions, whether you are preparing food at home or dining out while managing one of these conditions. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Today's discussion is all about food allergies and intolerances. If you happen to be curious about what the difference is between these two things, well, hopefully you'll glean some insight into what I'm sharing today. Or if you are currently managing one of these conditions, then hopefully what you're learning and taking away from this conversation will help you feel a little bit more empowered and gaining some knowledge and insight into making some better choices for yourself. When it comes to a food allergy, we're talking about an autoimmune response. So this is the immune system, which is a wide variety of cells and different functions that are going on in your body where your body thinks it's being attacked by something. And that something, in the case of food allergies, is usually the protein in a food. If you have heard me talk before, and actually, I think I might be doing a webinar coming up soon about the macronutrients, what are known as the macronutrients in the food. That is your proteins, your fats, and your carbs. That's what makes up your calories or your energy in your food. So in the case of food allergies, we're talking about usually a response that the body is kicking in when it gets a protein from a food. The issue here is that the consequences can be fatal. So there's quite a spectrum of the symptoms that can come up when somebody has an allergic reaction to food, but we want to make sure that we are always aware that it can be a fatal situation. The allergic response will almost always also take place in the upper half of the gastrointestinal area. It'll also probably affect the lungs as well, so breathing and issues like that. I'm going to go a little bit into detail into the symptoms and consequences shortly. In the food intolerances section, the difference between the allergies and the intolerances. Intolerance is not fatal. Intolerance is part of the digestive system at work. So this is usually going to be more isolated in the lower gut region, the lower part of your gastrointestinal system, your small intestine, large intestine. So you're going to be finding things to be a little bit discomforting, some bloating, some cramping maybe, but nothing that's going to land you in the hospital. And in this case, a food intolerance is related to the carbohydrates in a food, which I'll share a little bit more about this, but you could also go back and listen to our podcast episode with Amanda Settle, who we go into what is known as the FODMAPs. FODMAPs are these fermentable sugars that cause some gastrointestinal discomforts, and that's along the lines of the intolerances or the sensitivities, especially when people are dealing with something like irritable bowel syndrome. So I'm going to name for you the top 9 food allergens as of April 2021. There are 9. There used to be 8. Now there are 9. So this is milk, eggs, fish, shellfish, tree nuts, peanuts, wheat, soybeans, and sesame. Sesame is the one that has been added to that list. I also want to share with you too that if you are or You don't know if you are allergic to a particular food item. It is possible that if you are allergic to certain pollens, depending on the seasons, depending on the plants in your region, that you might have some allergies to things like birch or grasses or ragweed or mugwort. Again, right, the plant world has certain kinds of macronutrients in there. So the proteins that can be found in some of these tree items or these grasses or ragweeds, et cetera, can also appear in foods. So it's possible that if you are allergic to birch, you might also be allergic to something like apples or cherries or peaches or plums. If you're allergic to certain kinds of grasses, you might also be allergic to something like cantaloupe or honeydew. If you are allergic to ragweed, you might also be allergic to banana or watermelon. And if you are allergic to mugwort, you might also be allergic to peach. So I bring this up because sometimes people don't know if you are currently trying to manage this condition and you are working with an allergist, hopefully they'll explain that to you. But if you're working with a registered dietitian or a doctor, your primary care physician, it's important to bring these things up because there might be some sort of correlation that can help you better manage your condition. Related to that are latex allergies. So if you happen to have a known latex allergy, we're talking about that substance that can be found in things like gloves or balloons or pencil erasers sometimes can be made out of latex as well, that you might also have a related food allergy similar to what I just mentioned before. Something like apples, avocado, celery, papaya, tomato, those are all fruits that could potentially be correlated to your latex allergy. Some of the symptoms that we see come up, again, I mentioned that your consequences, the symptoms that are going to happen because it's more upper in the upper area of your gastrointestinal region and also going to be affecting your respiratory region as well, that you'll start maybe seeing signs of tingling, an itchy mouth, hives, eczema, swollen lips or tongue, difficulty breathing. Of course, therein lies the seriousness of this condition, and or a rash might take place. And the reason this happens is because when it comes to your body's mechanisms of breaking down these macronutrients, they're done in different parts of our gastrointestinal system. So when your proteins are taken in through the mouth and whatever it is that you're eating, whatever food item you're eating, they're broken down by digestive enzymes and acids, but these do not end up traveling beyond the stomach. So usually if you're going to have a reaction to something, it's going to occur in that immediate section of when you are swallowing and taking it in from the stomach and above. Some of the treatments that take place here for allergies are, number one is lifelong avoidance. The most common one I think we hear these days is celiac disease and going gluten-free, right? Because celiac is a condition in which your body is responding to the protein of gluten. But just a quick little side note, celiac kind of is the exception to the rule. Celiac symptoms do take place in the lower part of the gastrointestinal system, down in the microvilli of your small intestine. And so, in that case, you're going to be abiding by a gluten-free diet. But same thing if you were allergic to apples or onions or pears or whatever the case may be, you're not going to be able to eat them. Now, I also want to just do a quick side note here that it is possible, one of the things that is possible, again, if you speak with your doctor or your allergist, that you might be able to adjust the cooking method. So sometimes people are allergic to the raw protein found in a food. So they might not be able to eat a raw apple, but science nerd alert, if you cook the food item, you do what is called denaturing that protein, where when that molecule in the way that it's structured and folded, you apply heat to it and it kind of breaks all of those bonds and it unfolds that protein. So that's what's known as a denatured protein. So you might not be able to eat a raw apple, but maybe you can eat a cooked apple, like an applesauce or an apple pie. Again, these things you might not want to experiment with just to be on the safe side if you're being diagnosed for the very first time with an allergy. So please make sure that you're speaking with your doctor and your allergist about this. Other allergy treatments are going to be medicines that can help open the airways, having or carrying what's known as an EpiPen, epinephrine auto injector. That's going to be something you're carrying around with you, that in case you do find yourself in a situation where you are struggling to breathe or showing signs of having an allergic reaction of some sort before it does become serious or fatal, you can inject yourself with that EpiPen and that can open up the breathing pathways and give you some relief there and make it a little bit of a less severe situation. I mentioned working with an allergist, doctor, registered dietitian. Everybody here can help you ease your mind. I mean, working with any kind of food issue, whether you're allergic to something or, as we'll get to in a second, if you are intolerating something, like you have an intolerance or a sensitivity to it, these things can be kind of complicated and challenging and maybe even make you feel like you have to restrict your diet in some way, or you might have fewer foods to choose from, and we definitely don't want you to feel like you don't have enough to eat, or the foods that you are unable to eat carry a lot of good quality micronutrients or nutrition value to them. So working with somebody like a registered dietitian, shameless plug, obviously can help you create meal plans that are customized to whatever your needs may be without putting you in harm's way. And again, I say this all the time too. This is why I like doing this podcast and talking to people who are experts in their field, but also my own insight as a registered dietitian of making sure that I empower the patients and clients with whom I work, because I educate you. A lot of times I think I've said this before, I don't always assume people know what their condition entails or how serious it could get if they don't manage it properly. So educating the patient and making sure they feel empowered to manage their condition, and also provide counseling to them as well. Again, helping you overcome your barriers or any stresses that might happen if you're feeling like you're struggling and not sure exactly how to manage this condition. And then we're also going to talk about, I can't do this visually here. I mean, even though this is being recorded and it will be shared on the YouTube channel, I'm not going to do share my screen or anything like that, but we do have a lot of different wellness webinars and resources that you can go and check into, because it's important that you read your labels, my friend. You make sure you read your labels. And I think, I don't know exactly when this happened, but this is a federally mandated regulation that food manufacturers have to disclose the food allergens that are listed in their products. Now, the only issue is if you're dealing with kind of like a mom and pop shop or a very small business bakery, for example, they might just list the ingredients, or they might not even have a food label on their packaging. So please make sure that you are inquiring if something contains those known allergens that I just mentioned, or maybe something that is not on that list that you are allergic to. All right, let's flip over now to do a quick rundown of top intolerances. Top intolerances are things like lactose. So lactose, or anything ending in OSE, is usually a naturally occurring sugar in something. So lactose would be the naturally occurring sugar in milk, like cow's milk. This is why when people have lactose intolerance, it is their body's inability to, or it's a little harder for their body to digest this carbohydrate, right? Because it's a sugar. I mentioned before, proteins are more related to allergies, and carbohydrates, which are the longer form or the similar name to what we give to sugars in the intolerances world. Gluten, okay, so technically that is a protein, and some people do have intolerances to gluten as well. So that's why I said before, with celiac disease being the allergy and the autoimmune response to gluten, and because it happens with the consequences and the symptoms in the lower part of the gastrointestinal system, it's a little bit more of an exception to the rule of what I mentioned with the allergies. And a similar thing just now with the intolerance is gluten is one of those things that's on the list that's not a carbohydrate in a food, it's a protein in a food. But again, in an intolerance, you're not dealing with fatal consequences if there's a reaction. Caffeine is on this list as well. A lot of people have issues with the stimulant in the caffeine. Caffeine can be found in coffee, hello. Chocolate can be found in certain teas like black tea and green tea. Salicylates, these are chemical compounds that can be found in aspirin, but in the food form, in plant foods specifically, this is a chemical compound naturally occurring in things like legumes, fruits, vegetables, cauliflowers, some cereals. Cereals are technically going to be processed, but things that come out of something like buckwheat, oat, or corn, herbs, and spices. And I want to clarify here, or just take a moment to just kind of share that, as I'm reading off the list of things that have potential intolerances or triggers that could create an intolerance, that it's going to be quite a long list. So try not to freak out too much over this, okay? As I go to explain a little bit more about intolerances, you'll come to learn that how much of too much is, and of anything, could be an issue. So this is always why I try to encourage people to diversify their diet, have some sort of balance and variety so that you're not eating one thing in particular. And you can always try to figure out, portions, which we'll come across in a second when we talk a little bit about how to manage your intolerances. Next up are amines. Amines are also chemical compounds. These are found in things like cheese and chocolate and aged, pickled, smoked, canned, or dried meat and fish products. Things like wine can carry amines too. If you've ever heard of a histamine, these are part of that same kind of family. Again, this is a little bit of a natural response that your body's having, but this is also a naturally occurring chemical compound found in those food items. Also citrus, tomatoes, avocado, banana, all of these things have histamines, are also made and released by the body, as I said, in reaction to something, but they can also be found in food items. The list goes on here, my friends. Processed meats, chocolate, pork, egg white, I mean, on and on and on and on. Anything can potentially cause it. So one more time, I'm going to just encourage that if you do have some sort of intolerance, if you're finding some triggers, if you are feeling like this is challenging, then it could be a wide variety of foods. But I really, really, really encourage you not to eliminate everything that could possibly be on this list, because what else is left? What is left for you? The next up is FODMAPs. FODMAPs are, it's a, that's an acronym for fermentable oligo hyphen, di hyphen, and monosaccharides. So this is just, again, fancy terms for small and long chain sugar molecules. And the A stands for and, grammatically, well, I don't like that, but that's what it stands for. And the P stands for polyols, which are sugar alcohols. So again, these are naturally occurring sugars in foods, or there might be some sugar alcohols, like to sugar-free types of food items, like Halo Top, I think, is an ice cream that comes to mind, or sugarless chewing gum that comes to mind as well. So your body's going to have a bit of a sensitive issue when trying to digest some of these things, but so can it be with things like onions and garlic and avocado and apples. Again, these are just wide amounts of foods that carry naturally occurring chemical compounds in them, specifically in this case, carbohydrates, breaking down, maybe a little tummy trouble going on there. Next on the list are sulfites. Sulfites are found in preservatives. So this is when you're drinking beer, wine, even things like lemon juice, molasses, things like sauerkraut, but also can be found in things like shrimp and lobster and other crustaceans, and also dough type of foods like biscuits and pie crusts or pizza crusts. Again, those are sulfites. These sometimes can give people headaches too, I've heard, but sometimes they're also giving some people some gastro discomfort. And then last on the list here, again, we're just talking the top intolerances that I had created the list for, artificial sweeteners. I think I'm gonna have to do an episode, a standalone episode one day, or speak with somebody who is a little bit more well informed on this than I am, because there is quite a long list and a lot of different products when it comes to artificial sweeteners. But so if you are, here's where it gets a little challenging. So if you are managing a condition like diabetes, and you're told don't eat sugar in its true, table form, eat sugar-free things, or things that are low in sugar, or things that are sugar-free, then you could be doing your gut a disservice, because those artificial sweeteners, so the brand names for these things are NutraSweet, Equal, Sweet and Low, Splenda. Those are all the brand names, and the chemical name for them are things like aspartame and saccharin and sucralose. So these are going to be not natural substances, they're made in a lab. And so they can be a little bit ouchy on your tummy or in your gut section, which is technically in the lower part of your gastrointestinal region, because that's where all those molecules are breaking down and starting to march around and go off to where they need to go when they metabolize. So, this is something that I will sometimes get in trouble for saying, but I've worked with so many people with diabetes over the years that I feel confident in saying I would rather you eat the real sugar than do the artificial stuff, because your gut is very important when it comes to helping establish and build and maintain your immune system. And especially as we age, we're already dealing with that getting a little bit dysfunctional. So I would rather teach you how to incorporate real sugar into your diet, whether or not you are taking medicine like insulin, or an oral type of medicine to help manage your diabetes, because the artificial sweeteners don't really cut it for me. I know, again, that might be an unpopular opinion. You can write me if you want to discuss this further. All right. Next up in the intolerances section. So, your symptoms that you come across here, again, because it's more confined to the lower part of the gastrointestinal area, are going to be things like abdominal pain, bloating, gas, diarrhea, cramping of some sort too. But because the gut and the brain, hello, if you've been watching this and listening to me for as many years as I've been a dietitian, that's all I've been talking about is the gut and the brain axis, right? The bidirectional conversation that our brain and our head and our second brain and our lower part of what we call the gut, which is your small intestine more specifically, speak to each other. So of course, if you're going to be distressed in the lower part of your gut, it's going to affect the upper head, the upper brain. So you're going to be po possibly feeling signs of anxiety and fatigue and so on. The way that we treat intolerances is different than the way that we treat allergies, though, because again, I'm going to keep on encouraging you to do this. Yes, okay, fine, you can work with your gastroenterologist in this case, and your primary care physician, your doctor, but please, please, please go see a registered dietitian when it comes to dealing with GI, especially somebody who is qualified and specializing in the gastrointestinal gut disorders as a registered dietitian, because they are going to be able to handhold you. It can be a lot of trial and error, very time consuming to figure out what are the triggers and what are the affiliates. So, as I mentioned before, throughout the whole food family, the vegetable world, things that contain different types of those intolerances that I listed earlier, they might be affiliated with each other. So what they're probably going to end up doing is eliminating one small batch of those food items at a time, allowing your gut to kind of, heal a little bit. See how it goes a couple of weeks, months, maybe, and then reintroduce those foods little by little to see if those symptoms return or if they're completely subsided. Portion reduction is a huge thing with this too. Sometimes it's just a matter of going from, one cup to a half of a cup that you'll be able to alleviate those symptoms. So again, it could be a little bit time consuming and a little bit challenging to walk through that stuff, but it also depends on that spectrum that if you are uncomfortable. Gastro stuff's not fun, right? You don't want to feel like you have tummy trouble all the time, or like you're feeling very bloated and gassy everywhere you go, and just the way that your body feels too, and it feels kind of like stretched out like that. Every time I eat, I feel X. So we want to make sure that we are helping you eliminate that discomfort, but we also don't want to exacerbate or encourage or begin any kind of extreme dieting, restriction, or potential disordered eating slash eating disorders, because that is not going to be good for you at all. We don't want you to end up restricting like that just because you're afraid of what to eat. We want to teach you what you can eat to make sure that you can live a healthy, good life, even with those foods that are not going to be your friend. You can work around those things. So here too is where we go through education and counseling. I have worked with a lot of people who have been diagnosed with intolerances by their doctor and then just given a list of foods to completely avoid. And it makes me so angry because, as I just said, you're leaving people with no options when that is not at all the intervention or the treatment plan that we would give somebody with a gastrointestinal condition like an intolerance. Obviously, an allergy is a different story. Definitely staying away from whatever food you're allergic to. But in the case of an intolerance, absolutely not. We're making sure we're easing into that. We're not just handing off a long piece of paper with, I should say, a piece of paper with a long list of items that the person feels like, well, then what can I possibly eat? Not cool. All right. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here and just share a couple of things with the opposite ends of the spectrum and age populations. Number one is for children. So one of the things that we recommend is as soon as a child is able to eat what is known as complementary foods. So we're talking around the ages of 4 to 6-ish month. So whether or not they are on breast milk, chest milk, formula feeding, whatever the case may be, they're going to start taking in, mushy cereal or rice or whatever, that as soon as you possibly can, start incorporating all kinds of foods. Let them taste and textures. Obviously, stay away from anything too spicy, nothing with a choking hazard, obviously. And if you're nervous about doing this with your child, bring that food item with you to their wellness visit, to the pediatric wellness visit. I can't remember what the episode number is, but if you jump back to, I'll tag it in here on the notes. If you jump back to my conversation with Karen Mountjoy, we go all into this discussion about early introduction of food allergens. In the United States, peanuts are usually completely removed from a lot of schools, elementary schools or kindergarten areas, daycare, et cetera, just in case there's an allergy present. Obviously, we don't want to put anybody in harm's way. However, statistically speaking, there's only about 4 to 8% of truly legitimately diagnosed children with allergies. So what ends up happening is that things are not being introduced, or they're being removed in these school areas or these social areas that all the children are congregating for a large amount of time out of their day. And then it's possible that when they go home, they're not being introduced to those food allergens either. And so our body ends up building up or not building up a response to that. So if you can provide a children with tasting things out and giving them an early introduction to those food allergens, again, I know it can sound kind of scary sometimes because you don't want to hurt your kid, obviously. So, even something as a teeny tiny little, like an eighth of a teaspoon of maybe peanut butter or peanut butter powder or mashed up egg white or something cooked, obviously cooked up egg white, you can bring it to the pediatrician's office, to the wellness visits, administer it there. This way, in case anything is a sign, and you'll usually see that again because an allergy is protein related, usually seeing the symptoms in the top part of the body, that the child will start showing signs of, like, maybe a rash or something building up on their face. And then you have the doctor right there to be able to manage that condition. On the other end of the spectrum, I just got done talking about how as we age, our gastrointestinal tract becomes a little bit more compromised, and we are known as immunocompromised over the age of 60, 65 or so. And that's just by nature, that's how our body is. And then add into, unfortunately, a lot of people who are managing multiple conditions by that time, or who are on many, many regimens of medicines, what is known as polypharmacy, so variety of medicine, it's killing off a lot of the good bacteria in their gut. So it is possible that you can have adult onset allergies as we age, and intolerances as well, because there can be various reasons, including changes in the surrounding out external environment and the changes within the immune system or the digestive tract. Side note, I can't remember which is which and which is not, but I think it's peanuts are probably lifelong, but other allergies may come and go. So I think I looked up something with shrimp. I think shrimp was one of the things that you might have been diagnosed with early on, and that later in life it's possible it could disappear. But peanuts, I think, usually are lifelong. I could be mistaken. If I have the time to as a fact check that I will, but I'm probably better off just doing another version of this at some point later down the line and explaining a little further. So the reason why I bring these things up is because, especially like in the case of celiac disease, or maybe even some of the allergies where your symptoms are not super extreme, right? Like you're not realizing, like, oh, I have something going on, or like I get an itchy tongue, but it's not that big of a deal. My friends, I'm going to tell you this, and I think I've said this many times before, whether in this episode, these episodes of the podcast, or in my wellness webinars, or if you work with me, if you have an allergy, or if you have anything going on with your gastrointestinal system, your GI tract is made up of very delicate cells. These cells that turn over very quickly, and so if they're being damaged, and if you are not managing them properly, that damage can exacerbate a condition and it can turn cancerous. So we don't want you ending up with esophageal cancer or stomach cancer or intestinal cancer because you were like, I ate a bagel and I have celiac disease, but I don't feel anything from it. So I'm just going to keep eating my bagel, because underneath it all, your body is definitely suffering the consequences. All right, so let's take a couple of little takeaways from here. If you are cooking, if you are dining out, whatever the case may be, if you have a condition, try to take ownership of that. Try to be as educated as possible as to what you can and cannot eat. And don't feel weird. Like, ask people, is something in here? Can you tell me what's in here? If it's a proprietary food recipe, whatever, at a restaurant, obviously they might not disclose everything, but you can just say, is there wheat in here? Is there soy in here? I'm allergic to that. A lot of times, too, especially in some larger cities, like I live in New York City, and I know we have a couple of websites where people have gone on and listed out like allergy-free restaurants, so places you can feel safe with. We also have a lot of places that are by nature gluten-free, or making sure that there's no cross-contamination either, because that's the issue too when you're working in a kitchen, either at your home or when you are eating in someone else's kitchen or at a restaurant, is that stuff can touch other stuff. Okay, there can be a cross-contamination of some case if somebody's not properly washing utensils in between or washing their hands in between, or using the same cutting board for different types of food. So we don't want cross-contamination. So please make sure you're always reading information, asking questions, call in advance if you don't feel safe. This is the issue too, though, not just with the food restriction. If you're dealing with a condition, there's a social aspect to it too. You don't want to be that person who holds up the whole table from ordering because you're going down a list of 220 things that you may have an intolerance with. So it's possible to call the re if it's possible, call the restaurant ahead of time, the venue ahead of time, the whoever's barbecue ahead of time, and just say, I have some food issues, some dietary concerns, and these are the things I can eat, and these are the things I cannot. If I were to show up, do you have meals available for me? If not, then my friends, do what you can at wherever you can, right? Eat someplace beforehand and maybe just go and socialize and just have a glass of water or a glass of wine or whatever you can have, and don't put yourself in harm's way. Don't risk anything, and don't make yourself feel kind of awkward because you have to sit there and ask a million questions before you can eat. Obviously, I'm going to always advocate for working with a registered dietitian who can help you create personalized, customized meal plans. And as I said as well, helping you educate yourself for what needs to be done, but also helping providing you with a strategy that you can focus on your nutritional needs, the things that are going to provide you with what you need to function so that you're not denying yourself of anything, especially if you cannot eat certain things that come with those micronutrients, those vitamins and minerals that are very, very important. All right, so this was a bit of a quick and dirty episode because, as I mentioned in the intro, I do not have a guest that I'm interviewing today. So I hope that you found that interesting, entertaining, interesting, informative. Eat well and be well, my friend.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina. And I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.